I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. On the Ragged Edge of Medicine, Doctoring Among the Dispossessed is a new book by Dr. Patricia Kullberg reflecting on her decades of experience in medical practice for the homeless and urban poor in Portland. She'll give a reading at the University of Oregon Bookstar on Wednesday evening, May 24th, with book sales to benefit Whitebird Clinic in Eugene. She's here in the KLCC studios. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, Eric.
Well, is it correct to say that poverty is a medical issue as much as it is an economic one?
Well, poverty plays havoc with the body and the mind, for sure. And the simplest way, to answer that is that people, the lifespans among people who live chronically in poverty are remarkably shorter than everyone else. People suffer more chronic disease, much more mental illness. Poverty is very damaging.
There is definitely a relationship between physical illness, mental illness, and addiction. So how did you see those three intertwined in your practice for the poor?
Well, particularly among people with mental illness, addictions occur at two or three times the rate as in the general population. There's a lot of self-medicating that goes on, for example. There's being mentally ill is pretty stressful, so people turn to drugs. Drugs themselves can cause mental illness and certainly exacerbate mental illness. Drugs are very hard on the body, drugs and alcohol, so then you get into chronic disease, all sorts of chronic disease. And so they all sort of worsen each other, and they all go hand in hand. And we had many, many, many people who had what we call dual diagnosis or triple diagnosis, a combination of physical, mental, and addiction disorders.
Given that we're all a collective community, how does the ill health of the dispossessed affect the rest of us?
Well, in a variety of ways. They soak up a huge amount of resources. They certainly, I think, in a more on the kind of the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of humanity, they're depriving us of all that human potential. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I met in my practice, and I would look at them and say, you know, you shouldn't be living like this. You're smart, you're talented. What a loss for the rest of us. And then there are just all sorts of other issues around communicable disease, you know, when you have an impoverished population that's passing around tuberculosis, for example, safety issues because of the criminality that comes in, just the livability of our communities and just the way the way I feel when I'm walking around town and every other street has got a tent city on it. I mean, who wants to live in a community like that?
It must change the doctor-patient relationship as well to be doctoring for the dispossessed. So how was that different than it might be in a different kind of a medical practice?
Well, there are a few things that were different. For one thing, I did work for a few years at a clinic that was taking care of a working class, middle class population. And some of the main differences were that people who came into me at Burnside Westside clinics where I worked, they never came in with trivial complaints. You know, a trivial complaint turns out to be a privilege of people with means. People who are poor just, you know, they don't complain of trivial things. They come in, they've got something serious going on. So that was one interesting thing. Their health literacy tended to be poor. They didn't understand, you know, the workings of their body. I couldn't really expect or assume too much in terms of their knowledge. And I would have to be very extra special careful in terms of how I explain things. They were not particularly demanding. They were so grateful to get any care at all. that sometimes I think they were too compliant, or, you know, they wouldn't question in ways that sometimes I wished that they would. There was a tremendous amount of cognitive disability because of the chronic mental disease, the addiction disorders. People's brains just get messed up and they don't think very well. And to expect that they can manage a medical regimen, we learned as an institution that you couldn't expect that they could make their own appointment, or that they could find that address, or that they could take this pill every other day. You had to be very careful about sussing out what they were capable of, in a way I never did in the other practice.
And your experiences in all these practices, how did it affect your view of how we can better our healthcare system?
Well, I mean, for the first thing, there's got to be universal care. It's a real false economy not to be providing the same level of care for everybody. The wastage of resources is just astounding, and we saw it all the time. So that's kind of principle number one, I think. And then there's got to be care that's directed much more carefully to the whole person. I mean, I know this is kind of a cliche, but you really need to not only attend to the physical and mental health, but you've got to look at things like nutrition and education and physical activity and stress and communities and family life. And I don't think we've recognized the need for that for a long time, but we don't do very well at it.
Places like Whitebird Clinic, for which your event is a benefit, can and cannot do some things within the healthcare system. What do you see as their role and their limitations?
You know, I volunteered at Whitebird Clinic when I was a student here in like 1973 or 74, just that little piece of information. Well, the problem with a place like Whitebird Clinic is that very often it is marginalized within the healthcare system. So it's like one's association with impoverished people kind of sets you apart, and so you may or may not be able to get access to the tests you need or the specialists you need, and that was always a problem for us in the clinic, you know, for the clinics that we worked in. So that was a real limitation. I think the other limits have to do more with the fact that people come who really have... they have medical problems, but what they really need is a home. And, you know, we weren't set up to provide homes or a job or, you know, a meaningful activity. So that's sort of the limits of medicine. I think the strength of those institutions is that they learn how to interact with marginalized populations in ways that are effective and respectful. And we had experiences, certainly, when we would send our patients elsewhere and people, you know, the kind of reception they would get, or that they would be sent home and be asked to do things that were just completely unreasonable. It was clear that no one had taken the time to figure out what's the home environment here, what is this person capable of. So I think the institutions that serve marginalized populations gain that skill set.
In telling these stories of your experiences among the dispossessed, you chose to do it through 15 very individual vignettes rather than some overarching analysis. Why did you choose that tactic in putting this book together?
Well, for a couple of reasons. One is that the initial impetus for writing the book was for me to come to terms with encounters or experiences that didn't go well, that didn't go as planned, that I felt troubled by. And writing about them was a way to make sense of them, and it's also a way to generalize you know, what I was seeing and experiencing. So it naturally fell into, you know, one person, one story. But the other thing is that, you know, storytelling is pretty central to medicine. Every encounter really starts with a story. So it's all about story and constructing a story about a patient's life and where, and then where that, what you're going to do about the problem that they present. So there's kind of a characters and a plot and a theme. And so it was sort of natural in that way. And I think storytelling is the way you get to people's understanding or how you create understanding. I think people are very drawn to story and like to get their information from a story. So I just thought it was more appealing that way.
Inevitably, as a storyteller, you learn so much about yourself in the process of storytelling. So what did this illuminate for you in your own personal experience?
Well, what I learned, one of the things I learned was that I wasn't very tough. You know, a lot of the folks who would come in, I would be sort of astounded at what they were unable to endure and how they managed to just get up in the morning, let alone be cheerful and have a sense of humor and be very resourceful, you know. And I kept thinking, you know, would I be like that? I just wasn't sure. The other thing that I learned is that, you know, making mistakes is inevitable in medicine, in anything you do. In medicine, there are certain consequences to that, and that's something that I had to come to terms with. I think all doctors do, or in nurses and, you know, other practitioners. But that was a very tough thing for me to come to terms with, was making mistakes and forgiving yourself and not walking away. Not saying, because a lot of people do walk away from medicine because of that. And the rate of divorce and suicide and addictions is very high among physicians. I don't know if people know that. And I think it's because of that sense of responsibility and making mistakes. So that was another thing that I had to struggle with. And then another thing, I suppose, was the conflict. I just did not expect, I had this idea that you're a doctor and you go in and, you know, people come to you for help and you give them help and everything is nice. Well, it's not, it's not like that. You don't necessarily have the help they want. What you have may not work for them. There's just all sorts of conflict that goes on. And I wasn't great at conflict. It wasn't my strength, shall we say.
Sounds like a very humbling experience as well.
It is. It is very humbling. It's very eye-opening and humbling, yeah.
And now that the storytelling is done and the processing is done and the book is a solid, fixed object, It has its own life that now begins. So where would you like to see it go and what would you like to see it accomplish?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that's really important right now in this political environment is that we open our eyes to other people's lives. And the lives of the people in this book in particular, I think, have tended to be invisible and off the grid, and people don't want to look. And I think if we're ever going to heal some of the divisions that are in our society and growing, it seems like, right now, then we have to start looking at where other people, how other people live, and trying to understand how other people live and, you know, develop an empathy for that. So I see it as kind of a political project in a way.
And do you see ways that those of us who are average citizens and not doctors can contribute to this kind of a healing?
I think getting out there and simply being active right now would be a good thing. I 80-90% of the misery I saw would not have occurred had there been a socioeconomic system that took care of everybody, and especially of the vulnerable. So much of what I saw was preventable. And so I think those underlying systems, the economic system, the social systems, the institutions are where we need to focus our energies.
And in what small way do you want your event at the UO Bookstore to contribute to that overall conversation?
Well, I hope people come out and buy the book and read it and think about it. I hope we have a lively discussion. I would love it if people came who are actually active around issues like single-payer health care or environmental justice or anti-racist work or all those things that actually contribute to ill health in a pretty direct way. We can trace that line pretty directly. I would love it to have conversations with people about some of those issues.
Well, thank you for your courageous medical work, your storytelling, and for coming in this afternoon.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Patricia Kullberg, author of On the Ragged Edge of Medicine, Doctoring Among the Dispossessed. She'll give a reading at the UO Bookstore on Wednesday, May 24th at 7 p.m., in which book sales will benefit Whitebird Clinic following a 6 p.m. reception that will gather donations from Whitebird Clinic's wish list, including adult clothing, blankets, sleeping bags, tarps, travel-sized toiletries, and, of course, money. For more information, whitebirdclinic.org and patriciakullberg.com. For an extended version of this interview, kLCC.org. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.